Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 70 of the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about Trump is afraid of Biden. What else matters? Kind of the way that these podcast episodes work is like for the first 50, I wrote down about 25 ideas that things I think would be interesting to talk about. And then Michael and I, as the year went on, certain things would happen, like Scalia died. And so we would do an episode about that, sort of like breaking news. And then gradually, if I felt a good place or like a slow period or whatever, I'd put in ideas that I'd already had. And one of the ideas that I had for this season, and I've had it for a while, kind of was going to do it back when the primary was going, was why Biden should be the nominee, because Trump is afraid of him. And to me, that's all that matters. But quickly, a lot faster than I thought, Joe Biden won Super Tuesday in a landslide, and then he solidified his support. Basically, the primary was almost over before it began, just in a couple of week period, where he went from being down and out and discounted and half dead, and when I was going to do this episode, and then now to being the nominee, and people are talking about his VP and stuff. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll do this episode a couple of weeks ago, but then the protests started to happen, and some of American cities were having riots, and some were burning. All of it's sort of victim of timing, in that some episodes you just get to a lot faster than others, and certain things you want to talk about. But this is a good time to talk about this, because I keep seeing a recurring theme of it being like, well, it's Trump versus Biden for the soul of America. Everybody says the soul of America is at stake every presidential election. Romney versus Obama, the soul of America is at stake in this election, or McCain versus Obama. And it's not really, you know what I mean? Like, to be honest, it was fantastic that Barack Obama won twice, but that wasn't truly an ideological battle for the United States. McCain and Obama, they agree on a lot of things that are important. You could kind of say the same about Romney, or certainly the Romney that's been. You know, you never know which Romney is going to show up. One week you see him and he's bashing Obama and socialize this and that, and then like a couple years later he's at a Black Lives Matter rally and talking about Trump's a piece of shit. So, you know, Romney's a little all over the place. Jason Sudeikis on SNL did a dead-on parody of him when he'd have Romney like at a tattoo parlor and he's getting a face tattoo, or he's at a biker rally and he's talking about, he's like, I got more guns than I need, but not as many as I want. He just, whoever he's around, he absorbs their personality. But you have to give Romney some credit, because he's doing what a lot of Republicans are refusing to do right now. So this is how low the bar is. The bar is so low then when Romney goes to a Black Lives Matter rally, we're just like, wow, Romney's so woke, and he looks really great. And the Supreme Court, just because a couple of justices were on the right side of an easy, no-brainer LGBTQ issue to say, hey, you know, should trans people and gay people, should their employers be able to discriminate against them? The obvious answer to that is no. Actually, when I saw that verdict, I was surprised that it wasn't already decided on. I thought that had been decided a while ago. Usually civil rights, things like that, are decided first, and then marriage. And so I thought that would have been settled probably before gay marriage. But the fact that just because Gorsuch and Roberts were willing to be like, oh no, it should be illegal for you to discriminate against gay people, which you'd think like, okay, that's obvious. This isn't Iran. This isn't Saudi Arabia. People are willing to be like, oh wow, you justices, are they becoming liberals? Are they becoming Democrats? Like, no, they're still ultra conservative. I'm surprised it wasn't unanimous. Decisions like that used to be unanimous. You may not get Clarence Thomas, who we all know is a piece of shit, but the fact that Kavanaugh, they said, oh, Kavanaugh, you know, he'll be a swing vote, he'll be moderate. Well, of course, that hasn't turned out that way. And I think this is why liberals wanted to keep him off the court as much as possible, because they knew he was a partisan hack. And you even see, I remember in episode 63, or when I had the interview with Mike Breuer, he mentioned that Kavanaugh and Mitch McConnell, they were campaigning together. And so Kavanaugh's such a party hack. He doesn't think there's anything strange about, I probably shouldn't be seen campaigning with politicians in an election year, like that's a little strange or whatever. But to him, it's like, nah, bro, let's go to the rally. Let's have a couple of beers afterwards. Let's have a good time. And oh yeah, I'll vote against gay people in this really important issue that you wouldn't think you would need it to come down to Gorsuch and Roberts, and that they would all vote the right way. But I guess that's not how it works. And knew that's not how it works. Speaking of the Kentucky primary, just very quickly, they're going to do the Democratic primary for Kentucky. I believe it's this Tuesday, June the 23rd. I moved it back a couple times. But if there's anybody listening to this that's in Kentucky or has relatives or whatever, I think you should vote for Mike Breuer. You know, I'll support anybody. Like, I'm not against any of the candidates, whoever the Democratic nominee is. God, I hope they beat Mitch McConnell. But I think he has a good chance. I would say a better chance than some of the others at beating him, only because I've talked to him personally. And of course, you might say, well, Alabama Liberal, you're biased because you've interviewed him and you like him, and some of the others you haven't interviewed or whatever, so you may be a little in the bag. But that's not exactly it. Voters, they're not so much motivated by ideology. Like, I suspect he's probably to the left of me on a bunch of stuff. And that's cool. That's fine or whatever. But it's not so much ideology. It's more personality. I think swing voters can be as liberal as you want or as conservative as you want, but they're really kind of responding to personality a lot. And he has a great personality, very easy to talk to. I could see him being a great campaigner. If his campaign had some money and he was the nominee, I could see him beating Mitch McConnell. I think it's really easy to draw a contrast between Mitch, who's stiff and elitist and standoffish and aloof and just kind of a jerk and doesn't live in Kentucky and doesn't have their interest at heart, and to say, hey, here's this affable, good-natured farmer who's a farmer and an ex-Marine and a journalist and a smart guy and actually lives in the state and all these great things. So, I mean, I just think the contrast is so clear that it would be easier for him to win than perhaps some others. And whoever gets it, I'll be for them. But I do think you should consider him if you're in that state. Bringing it to the main conversation, we're seeing all these things about it's Biden versus Trump. It's the soul of America. America's at stake. It's an existential crisis. Trump's the worst thing to happen to us since American Hitler. You know, I mean, like, not since Andrew Johnson has a president potentially going to sink this country into a constitutional crisis the way Trump always seems to be threatening to. And yet at the same time, it kills me to see people be like, well, here's what Biden needs to do to motivate people. Here's what Biden's got to do to get people to show up. Here's what Biden's got to do to win us over. They're treating this like it's a normal election. They're treating it like it's Obama versus McCain or Bill Clinton versus Bob Dole. Donald Trump is not Bob Dole. He's not John McCain. He's not even Mitt Romney. Donald Trump is a fucking nightmare who cannot be allowed to serve in office one more day. He can't be there. He can't continue. This cannot go on. The last 4 years feel like 40 years. The other day, I mean, I was talking, I'm going to blow your mind. Donald Trump has only been president for not even 4 full years. Not even 4 full years. Right? And they couldn't believe it. They're like, no, you have to be kidding. And I'm like, no, it hasn't even been 4 full years. They're like, it feels like it's been 3 terms, right? Because it just feels so long. January 2017, his inauguration day, that might as well be 1917, right? Might as well be World War I. That's how much things are constantly changing and getting added and stretched out. Trump reminds me of one of those third world dictators who you'd always see, like the guy in Tunisia or Mubarak. They all would dye their hair jet black. They would never let themselves be gray because they want you to forget how long they've been there. So they want you to sort of forget, like, hey, they've been here for decades, because they would dye their hair, do plastic surgery. Gaddafi, his face looked like fucking silly putty, right? So they're wanting you to forget that they've been there for decades, and that way the time passage in a different way. Trump, it's similar to that, but in a different way, in that the events of the last 3.5 years feel so jam-packed with nonsense and bullshit and petty conflicts and squabbles. You feel so exhausted that it feels like, well, he's been there for 30 years and things aren't as bad as they could be. Oh, wait, it's only been 3.5, and we've gone from a booming economy to an almost certain recession. We've gone from relative trust in the government to people being like, coronavirus is a hoax, don't wear your face mask, don't socially distance. You know, you're seeing Trump doing all these rallies now. Yesterday was the big Oklahoma rally, and he's literally getting back in the swing of things. They say that energizes him. He loves these big rallies. The governor of North Carolina, he didn't want Trump to do a big grand scale convention. He wanted them to sort of only a quarter capacity. Everybody washes their hands, wears face masks, things that make sense in the time of coronavirus. Trump hates that idea. He wants big mass scale rallies. So he's going to move the convention supposedly to Georgia or Florida. I think different states were auditioning. He's going to go somewhere else so that they'll let him do whatever he wants. Now I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know, that North Carolina governor, he's trying to literally, I don't even think Trump realizes how stupid this is. Governor from an opposing political party is trying to save your fans, people that are idiots, people that in North Carolina, it'd be good for him if they did get sick. He's trying to save their lives, trying to protect them for you so they can vote for your dumb ass 3 months later in the general election. And you're like, no. No, this is not what I want at all. I'm sitting there thinking, like, if it was me, I'd be like, you know what, Trump, have as big a rally as you want. Let's double the capacity. Fill out the parking lot. No masks. Don't wash your hands. Not a fucking drop of hand sanitizer within a 1 mile radius. Let's just have the rally you want. Pack in as close as you can. Get together. Don't socially distance at all, my friend. Let's have at it. Let's go for it. And I'm thinking that that's what they're doing at these Trump rallies, like in Oklahoma and some other states that he's going to do. And my whole thing is, you know, it's going to be kind of funny when all his fans start getting sick, and most of them are not going to die. And so I'm thinking, if you're a Trump fan and you're going to his rallies, and you know that the President of the United States doesn't give a shit if you get sick, and you get sick, and then you get severely sick from Corona, how many votes is that going to be for Joe Biden? Joe Biden, he's doing Zoom. He rarely makes public appearances. He probably won't do a lot of rallies. Trump fans say, oh, that's because Joe Biden, he doesn't have Trump's energy. He's an old man. Like, Trump is some young Hitler youth, you know, like he's this ideal Aryan stud or something like that. And they're like, oh, Biden, he's just old and he got dementia and all this shit. And it's like, well, it could also be because there's coronavirus. Biden is probably in better shape than Trump is. I know he is physically, and he probably just doesn't want to put his fans' lives at risk by asking them to go to some stupid rally. For what purpose? I'm not sure. It's one of those things where Trump, he's still very much locked in this mindset of 2016. What worked for me was I did big, huge rallies, and Hillary refused to, and that's what cost her the race, was Hillary being lethargic and being afraid to go to Michigan and afraid to go to Pennsylvania, and she didn't want to be seen in Wisconsin because of NAFTA and all the blowback, and she didn't do enough big rallies, and that's what put me over the top and not her. They've been told that because people like to blame Hillary Clinton for her loss. They like to say, well, if only she'd had one more big rally in Michigan, that could have, we wouldn't have Trump as president. She won 3 million popular votes and yet still lost 3 states. So you could even say, even if she'd done a few more rallies in Wisconsin and Michigan, even if she'd continued to lose Pennsylvania, she still, you can't really put it on any one thing. Like, no matter how many times she might have gone to Wisconsin and Michigan, even if you lose Pennsylvania, you still lose the race. That's just how it works. And I don't think the burner people understand that. They're like, oh, Bernie, he would have won Michigan. He beat her big in Michigan. And I'm like, it's one state. You need 3 to win. He would have lost Virginia, so it all would have been a wash anyway. People have their narratives. They believe if Hillary hadn't been so standoffish, she would have won. If she'd done more media, she would have won. If she'd had more rallies, she would have won. You always could have said woulda, shoulda, coulda, right? Her own people and their polling data, they say James Comey had more to do with it than anything she did or didn't do. That James Comey sunk her chances more. Bernie Sanders staying in the race till the fucking convention hurt her chances more. Him bashing her for 6 months about being a corporate sellout. Let Trump do the same thing. Hammering her about NAFTA over and over again. You know, all these things, they add up to a complete picture. Of course, Hillary's not going to want to say there's more shit she could have done. And of course, all the people that hurt Hillary, like Bernie, they're not going to want to admit that maybe they could have dropped out a few months earlier. But now we have a race where everything seems to be in Joe Biden's direction. Bernie Sanders did the right thing this year, which he did not do in 2016. People are saying, you know, coronavirus had something to do with that. They also say Bernie likes Joe Biden more than he liked Hillary. Bernie didn't have a good relationship with Hillary, and he just didn't like her. And he likes Joe Biden in a lot bigger way. So you've now got pretty much the entire Democratic Party. Bernie has endorsed Biden. Amy Klobuchar has done the right thing. She's pulled out of the VP search, which was great because it was one of those things where the whole time in the primary, she's Biden's stalking horse. She's sort of like his attack dog. She goes after people in the primaries for him in the debates. She never hits Biden. That was real obvious. You could see that, right? People think, well, she's setting it up to be his VP. She wants that Mondale or Hubert Humphreys, all those Minnesota VPs. She wants to do that for Biden. And that would be similar to LBJ was JFK's vice president and then becomes the big man. Biden becomes the new LBJ and she becomes the new Hubert Humphrey or something like that. But she's linked to the killer of George Floyd. He was a cop. He had many excessive brutality charges. She refused to prosecute a lot of police misconduct while she was that. She's had a lot of racial issues. It's not just that one. I mean, she's not seemed very concerned with how she appears to non-white voters. The entire primary, she plays up Minnesota, 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 one of the whitest states in America, one of the states with one of the biggest racial problems, as we've seen. I can vouch to it, having lived there. Might do another episode just about race in Alabama, New York, Minnesota, and LA and show how some ways they're different, some ways they're the same. I think that might be a good episode I'll do later on. But literally, you know, there was a lot of different things about her that was very off-putting to community activists. She's never really worked to win those people over. She's never really cared about them. Having lived in Minneapolis, I can vouch for the fact that a lot of stuff I would see Al Franken at. If there was a Black Lives Matter rally, he might come. I saw him at the Pride Parade, you know, when he was the senator in June. I never saw Amy Klobuchar in anything. I mean, she never would show up to stuff. A lot of people say she has a drinking problem. A lot of people say she's mean. Biden's really trying to win over the youth vote and also people of color. He's got to try to inspire a lot of people. Amy Klobuchar is a mean, possibly drunk, who abuses her staff and doesn't put in the work with any type of community activist, doesn't really care about voters of color. You could see where it's not the best pick in the climate that we're in. Plus, I don't really like her that much. But she did do the right thing. I have to give her this. In the primary, she dropped out when she knew she'd lost, and I give her credit, and endorsed Joe Biden. That put him over the top in Minnesota, And all these things really helped him solidify and beat Bernie a lot faster than he would have. Like beating him in Minnesota, that definitely was a blow to Bernie. And then in Michigan, Klobuchar dropping out probably helped Biden. So that was a huge blow to Bernie too. So all these things made it seem like, Bernie, you really should, because if you've lost Minnesota and Michigan and some of the states you were winning 4 years ago, it really is hopeless. So that let it see that Biden would be more popular than him in that Midwestern corridor that they're trying to win over, and really undercut his electability argument. Did the right thing in the primary, dropped out in the right time, endorsed him immediately, and now the VP search. Now, it looked like she had a gun to her head. I'm going to say the video where she dropped out, it didn't look like her first choice. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised to see a red dot on her forehead, like a laser from a sniper rifle. Literally a sniper trained on her or something, because it didn't look like she wanted to. But Klobuchar, again, puts the need of the party ahead of her own personal needs, and there could be a cabinet position. I'm not sure that a senator wants to be the Secretary of Agriculture. That kind of seemed like it would be a step down, and I'm not sure that he could point her as Attorney General because of all the baggage from her job doing that in Minnesota. She probably would do a fine job. I mean, certainly better than Bill Barr and Jeff Sessions, certainly better than that. But, you know, I'm not sure he could put her that anyway, even if he wanted to. So it's one of those things where, like, I'm sure she didn't want to do what she did and pull out of the VP search, and I'm not sure she would leave the Senate just to be like, he would probably make her Secretary of Agriculture in a second. That's kind of like a lateral move from the Senate, possibly a step down, I think. She did the right thing, but Elizabeth Warren still hasn't done the right thing. She dropped out, and it was kind of weird because she didn't endorse anybody. The Bernie people are pissed off because she didn't endorse Bernie. In their minds, they think that would have made a difference. I'm 100% positive that that made no difference whatsoever. Like, I don't think that would have got Bernie a single state. It kills me to look at it and be like, Elizabeth Warren, it's all her fault. She literally came in dead last in her home state of Oklahoma. Mike Bloomberg, a Jewish New York billionaire who they don't like there, he beat her out in her home state of Oklahoma. In Massachusetts, she came in a distant third from Biden and Bernie. It's over. In New Hampshire, which shares some of the media markets from Boston, they have some of their media markets as Massachusetts, she comes in a distant fourth. Klobuchar beats her in New Hampshire, which doesn't really even make sense, right? I'm not sure how you can look at it and say Warren was in the race for 15 to 20 states, whatever it was that voted. She did dismal. She never did better than third in a single state, and including her home state and the one that she represents in the Senate. And most states, she's a distant fourth or fifth. I mean, she really does terribly. And then to come out and be like, but somehow that candidate who's quitting the race because they couldn't translate media buzz and white liberal activists and a lot of money, they couldn't translate that into actual votes. If that person had endorsed Bernie when he's already got an outsized share of white liberal activists, somehow that's going to put him over the top. I don't follow that. I don't believe that's true. But the Bernie people are now kind of anti-Elizabeth because they think she's a snake. She hurt his chances. She undercut him. In one of the debates, you know, she made a thing about, he said a woman couldn't win in 2020, that a woman didn't need to be the nominee because they couldn't win. Then she says, did you call me a liar? Like right after the debate. So she kind of got in his face about it a little bit or whatever. And it's a little bit like, you know, did he say it? Did he not say it? I don't think it really makes a difference. They don't like her. So some of the Bernie people don't like her. And yet at the same time, we keep seeing this narrative of like, oh, Elizabeth Warren, she's got to be the VP because she can win over the Bernie people for Biden. And I'm like, she's probably less popular with them than Biden is. In their minds, Warren hurt Bernie's chances. He could have beat Sleepy Joe. And Bernie has a better personal relationship with Biden, or so it appears, than he does with Warren right now. So I don't really convinced that she is the key to winning over Bernie's base. And I'm not really convinced that she's going to get Biden a single vote that he wouldn't get anyway. Because who is Warren's base? White liberal activists, Hollywood people, media people, journalists. Aren't all these people going to vote for Biden anyway? I mean, does he really need Warren to win over these people when Trump is the opponent? You see again where she didn't want to drop out of the race. She was forced out. She didn't endorse Bernie. She also didn't endorse Biden. Kamala Harris and Klobuchar and Buttigieg and every other opponent, they endorsed Biden fairly quickly and a lot faster than Warren did. Now she won't withdraw herself from the VP search, which Klobuchar has done and the senator from New Hampshire has done, a couple of others have done. Now it's pretty much only black women and Elizabeth Warren. I guess Gretchen Whitmer is still technically in the VP search, but a lot of people seem to think it's pretty doubtful that she would be chosen as VP. So you pretty much have either Elizabeth Warren or a handful of black women as the potential nominee. Now, now that Klobuchar's gone. And Warren is not going to withdraw herself. Also, he can't pick Warren because her state has a Republican governor. And this is never brought up. I don't know why this is never mentioned. Charlie Baker is the governor of Massachusetts. As a Republican, he would get to appoint her successor. We're putting all this effort into taking back the Senate. I mean, I'm literally over here begging people, please go vote in the Kentucky primary because we can't have Mitch McConnell reelected. We'd love to flip the Senate. And so you're going to put all that effort into possibly picking up 5 seats and maybe losing one with Doug Jones. I mean, barely being able to squeak it past into a 51 majority and then say, oh, wait, if everything goes perfectly, maybe we can get a 51 majority, but we'll be back down because Elizabeth Warren's seat will be taken by a Republican. And I say 51, it could easily be 50-50, and then that's the deciding vote that breaks it down. It could be 49-51 in favor of Republicans, and then we need to win Romney over as much as we possibly can just to get to a tiebreak in the VP slot. It's just stupid. It's completely stupid to have her be the VP knowing a Republican will pick up that Senate seat, and that will be damaging to all Biden's agenda and what he's trying to accomplish. It's also stupid because you have no idea that you can trust Elizabeth Warren. Like I said, literally everybody, I mean, I think Bernie Sanders endorsed Biden before Warren did. The entire Democratic Party endorsed him just about before she did. And she only withdrew because she was forced to. She has her own agenda, and you can't trust her. And I've seen articles talking about how even though Bernie is often seen as like the rebel and the independent, when he's actually under an administration, the Clintons can go to him or the Obamas can go to him and they can get votes that they need. He'll vote generally how Bill Clinton or Barack Obama ask him to vote. And he'll say, I regret that vote about this, or I wish I hadn't have voted against that, or I wish I'd voted different. But he still generally does the right thing. Obama and his people all talk about what a pain in the ass Elizabeth Warren is. They all talk about how she's got her own agenda. She's out for herself. When Hillary was the nominee, she met with Elizabeth and really was just trying to meet with her and just trying to talk to her. And Warren was trying to influence her hiring decisions. Don't even think about Sheryl Sandberg as the Treasury Secretary because she worked under Lawrence Summers, and I don't like Lawrence Summers, and I don't want the whole Goldman Sachs team to be part of the Treasury Secretary thing. To be honest, that's a little self-serving too because Warren wanted to be Treasury Secretary. So if you're trying to block any Treasury Secretary but you, that's also a little self-serving. And that's why, you know, Biden, he's probably sitting there thinking like, I just want to keep Warren as close as I can. I can't make her VP. I probably can't make her Treasury Secretary because again, we lose a vote in the Senate. It really makes no sense. It's kind of stupid, but I don't want her to get pissed off to the point where she's blocking all my actual picks and she's holding them up and she's not voting for them because she is completely self-serving in that way and she will do that. People talk a lot about our political systems dominated by white old men. Well, it's also white old women, right? Nancy Pelosi, Elizabeth Warren, Dianne Feinstein, all these women in their 70s and sometimes 80s that refuse to retire, refuse to step down, won't make room for the next generation. They won't get out of the way. And I know we properly call out Trump and Biden and Bernie and different people for doing that. You know, look, it's white women too. I mean, they don't want to give up that power. And I think Warren is a perfect example of that. Biden is being told over and over, you really need a woman of color on your ticket. Kamala Harris would be perfect. Susan Rice would be perfect. Val Demings might be okay. Also heard Keisha Bottoms and Stacey Abrams. I think they're less good for different reasons, but several women being talked about that would be better than Elizabeth Warren. And at the same time, she's sitting there saying like, no, me. Jane Fonda and some other rich old white ladies, they put out a letter saying it's got to be Warren. She'll motivate the base and all this stuff. The base is telling you that they want a black woman. So I'm not sure where they're getting that Warren is the base. I mean, it's the same shit where they keep saying Warren's so progressive. She speaks to the base. And then the primary actually happens and she does dismally. The base is voting for Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, right? They're voting for anybody but Elizabeth Warren. And that happens over and over again. And I think she's a media darling. The media loves her. They're obsessed with her for some reason. I can't figure it out. But I'm not sure that that translates into actual votes. And all this is to only say that, to get to the main topic of the podcast, when people say things like, Joe Biden, I don't like him, or he doesn't excite me, or he's not that great, or I'm not excited about voting for Joe Biden, who gives a shit? Like, I mean, I to just be blunt, but it's like, literally, who gives a shit? Donald Trump is president. He must leave. Joe Biden can beat him. I know Joe Biden can beat him. What's the problem? Literally, what is the problem? This year, I don't want to see any bullshit. Like, let's vote for Green Party or Gary Johnson or whoever the Libertarians put up or whatever flavor of the month political party. But I can't vote for Hillary or Trump. I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson. If you do that, fuck you. I mean, really, fuck you, because it's just, you're wasting your vote. It's stupid. It's childish. I mean, at this point, it's childish. You see a lot of things about the Green Party coming out now. The Green Party's only real accomplishment has been to deny two great presidents, Al Gore and Hillary Clinton, would have been both great presidents, qualified, intelligent, razor-sharp people, maybe not the best candidates in the world, would have been great presidents. I truly believe that, especially for Gore. I truly believe Gore and Hillary might have been better presidents than Bill and Obama. They're so smart. And they're just so experienced and so on top of things. They would have known the job the second they come in. For Bill and Obama, it takes a year or two to kind of get a grasp of the job. If you've never been in the executive branch before, learn the ropes, learn that, oh, wait, Republicans hate us. They're never going to work with us. Gore and Hillary would have known that right off the bat. Green Party's biggest accomplishment, to deny them over the two worst presidents in the last 100 years, George W. Bush and Donald Trump, two of the worst presidents of all time. I think both of those easily go in the top five worst presidents. I really believe it. So they're going to deny two of the best presidents we ever could have had. Al Gore, he'd be perfect for a cabinet position in Biden's administration. I'd love to see him be Secretary of State, but he's the head of the curve on the internet, science, climate crisis. He sits on the board of Apple. He helps with Pixar, Google, all these different things. I mean, a man like that in charge of the federal government, what could be accomplished? I mean, literally, we might already have Hyperloop. We might already have high-speed rail. The budget surplus, he wanted to take that, and when the baby boomers went into Social Security, it would expand when they did, and that way Social Security would be solvent for 50 years. That's what he wanted to do. Bush blew it all on the tax cuts. Like, what a surprise that the studious nerd who helped found the internet had a better idea than the coked-up cheerleading party boy who got bounced out of college and his dad had to bail him out of everything and was in the Air National Guard rather than serving in Vietnam. What a surprise that Bush wasn't as good a president as Al Gore. Gee, who could have ever thought? Same thing with Trump. Hillary's a nerd who's been in politics her whole life. Let's go anti-establishment. Let's vote for that rich playboy who was in, said his idea of Vietnam service was avoiding STDs in Club 54. I mean, gee, what a surprise that the same type of person turns out to be a terrible president. What a surprise that Reagan wasn't a great president, considering he was a dumbass actor who didn't know what he was doing. Over and over again, when you see what's called the establishment, people rebel against it constantly. And I had a video about, I don't want to see any more outsider presidents who said, we need an outsider, we don't like establishment, inside Beltway. Establishment presidents are pretty fucking great. LBJ was an establishment president. He was able to get the Civil Rights Act passed, the Social Safety Net passed, Medicare, Medicaid, Voting Rights Act. He was a pretty great president. Talk about Vietnam, but I mean, when it comes to actually passing bills, he has a better legislative accomplishment than any Democratic president, perhaps ever, and certainly in recent eras, in recent decades. But people say, we need an outsider. You get Jimmy Carter, doesn't really know what he's doing, gets outfoxed on everything, Republicans outmaneuver him on every damn thing. Bill Clinton, the first couple years, happened to a lot. Barack Obama, first couple years, happened to a lot. It's only when they become inside that they actually kind of start to know the job and know what they're doing and really get accomplished. And all the people that are so-called outsiders, they're going to stand up for this. There's going to be the Bush Revolution, there's going to be evangelical Christians, the Reagan Revolution. You know, it's a lot of these different revolutions that wind up never really going anywhere, never really accomplishing anything. And so I kind of like the idea that Biden will be the first president since LBJ who knows the job well. Senator forever, then a vice president forever. The second he comes in, he's going to know how to pass a bill, what to get done, what senators to lean on, and really what to do. And I like that idea. That is exciting to me. And so when people say things like, Biden's not exciting, why didn't we get Buttigieg? Buttigieg would be fine. He would be decent as president if he could be elected. And I'm not convinced that he could be elected, to be honest with you. I'm not convinced he could win. But even the same thing, it's the same thing as Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. The first 2 years may be spent with him just learning the job and learning all the personality types and learning. I mean, he's an extremely intelligent person. But to go from being the mayor of a town that's about the size of Birmingham, Alabama, to being the president of the United States is a bit of a step up, you would say, right? I'm in charge of the military now. I'm in charge of the American economy now. I'm in charge of the federal justice system and the FBI now. I'm in charge of all these different aspects. The State Department is now looking to me to do all these things. And of course, he would do a better job than Trump. Extraordinarily intelligent. He processes information very quickly. But I'm still convinced it's a little bit of the first 2 years while he has a Democratic Congress, there's such a learning curve that maybe only one or two big pieces of legislation get passed. And he's not ready to rip and run until inevitably Democrats lose the House and the Senate in 2022 because of backlash to him being president. I mean, this keeps happening. Biden has to know that he's only got about 2 years from the time he enters office to really do anything. And that's assuming that they can take back the Senate. I think they can. I hope they can. And I like that Biden's the nominee because down ballot Democrats benefit greatly from him being the nominee. Couldn't make a bigger difference for Doug Jones. This is why you keep seeing all these red state Democrats, basically, they've endorsed Biden because they're like, Doug Jones is like, if Pete Buttigieg is a nominee or Bernie Sanders is a nominee, I'm going to lose re-election. Like, I'll lose. There's no question about it. But with Biden, I have a chance. Biden is popular with the people you need to be popular with to become president. Old people vote, and they vote in droves, and they vote down ballot too. Another reason I don't like Bernie as the nominee is because all Trump's people show up to vote against Bernie. And Trump's even said multiple times he wanted Bernie to be the nominee because he was ready to run against all this crazy socialist. He's going to take your retirement or whatever. He went on TV and said that. Like, he literally couldn't have been more obvious that he wanted Bernie to be the nominee. So you have all of Trump's base and all the moderates and independents that show up to vote against Bernie. But the problem is the Bernie people that come and vote for Bernie, that 20% of the Democratic Party that they think may be loyal to Bernie, but they don't know for sure exactly how many it is or how many are really libertarians, how many are Ron Paul fans, how many are regular Republican voters that just happen to like Bernie Sanders too. That nebulous, younger, white male base that he seems to attract, they show up and vote for Bernie, but because Bernie's told them the system is rigged, the establishment is corrupt, the DNC didn't want me to be the nominee, are they going to vote down ballot? Probably not. They just show up and mark his name and then leave. And then all the congressmen and the senators that have to run at the head, with Bernie Sanders at the head of the ticket, are kind of like, fuck, we're getting wiped out left and right, because we're seen as part of the same corruption as the Republicans, so they didn't vote for us when they showed up to vote. And we keep hearing over and over again that he got the youth vote and he got the Latino vote. These are the two least reliable voting groups in the Democratic Party. There's no evidence that they vote and vote consistently in voting down ballot races, or that they even vote in general elections. As I laid out before in that episode about millennials, Barack Obama didn't, he got the majority of the youth vote. It didn't make a difference. He would have won anyway. There's not been the biggest share of the youth vote in the last several decades has been Michael Dukakis, and he lost in a landslide. So millennials and the youth vote, they don't control the presidential race. They never have. And yet that seems to be all that they ever actually show up to vote for. They don't vote down ballot. So with Biden, you have a chance to have the Democratic president who doesn't completely piss off the people that actually vote and vote regularly. Rural people, older people, the white working class, and they routinely favor people like Joe Biden. We haven't had a Democratic nominee like him in a very long time. I can't even say Dukakis, because Dukakis was relatively young and seen as a little bit elitist and a little bit hippy-dippy. You really have to go back a lot of years to find a nominee like Joe Biden. Older people feel comfortable with it. It may very well be LBJ. I mean, even though Biden's from Delaware, is New England, but the way Biden comes across, it's almost like, he's more like a Virginia politician or something like that. Like, a lot of people view him that way. So when you see this thing of it being like, when I say Trump is afraid of Biden, what else matters? I really mean that, because Trump has always been scared of Biden. He wants to run against Bernie. He makes that as clear as he possibly can. Almost campaigns for Bernie, because in the primary he's saying, don't let them steal it for Bernie. Go out and vote. DNC's rigged. Practically encouraging people to go vote for Bernie. At one point, Don Jr. is encouraging people to go vote for Bernie. He said in the South Carolina primary, because it was open, the Republicans should show up and vote against Joe Biden. They wanted Joe Biden out of that race, and that couldn't have been more clear that Biden was the one they were afraid of. We know this because, if you'll remember, he was literally impeached trying to dig up dirt on Joe Biden. He goes to China and the Ukraine in different places asking for any dirt they have on Joe Biden. He's impeached over this. You know, he didn't do that for Elizabeth Warren. He didn't do that for Bernie Sanders. He didn't do that for Pete Buttigieg. So it's very clear that Biden's the one he's afraid of. That's the one he's worried about. That's probably the only one he was truly worried about. And that's because Trump is a political animal. We can sit here and debate back and forth. Is Trump a genius? Is he a moron? He's a moron. Like, there's a lot of things he doesn't know and he's not interested in. But there is one genius that he has. He's a political animal. I mean, he knew in 2016 to play up immigration. He knew that was the key to him winning over all these other people like Jeb Bush and shit that were better funded and better known, seen as more legitimate, had the whole network inside the RNC that would have enjoyed seeing them be the nominee. He knew immigration was the ticket. And a lot of the Republican voters, he knew that was the biggest single issue the Republican voters and the Republican business class that controls the Republican Party are a part on. The Republican business class, I can't win over the people like the Koch brothers, because they don't see that, they don't think they can control me, and they know I don't need their money. So they're going to be funding the lackeys like Scott Walker and idiots like that, you know, the fucking yes men that suck their hair off their balls. He didn't want to be that. He wanted to appeal directly to that base. And he knew the Republican Party's base, more than anything, is terrified of immigration, a Browning of America, press two for English, one for Spanish is the nightmare scenario, right? They're really scared about this. And he knew that was the right way to appeal to them, is to go after that issue. He's a political animal, and you can see it. The NFL protests that people are still talking about, Colin Kaepernick Kaepernick was out of the NFL. The protests were going away. It was fading as an issue. He comes in and makes it an issue. He comes in and makes Domino's and Papa John's and Colin Kaepernick and Take a Knee and Elijah Cummings in Baltimore. He loves these cultural issues. He plays them up. Part of it is that he's a huge racist, but another part of it is it's a strategy. Both, like his personal ideology and what he thinks that he can win with, they overlap a lot. And that's how he was able to win. That's how he was able to win the primary. Even though I think he was surprised he won the general election, I think he knew he would win the primary just based on the way he could play the media. He could play to a crowd. He could tell them what they wanted to hear. He knew the single one issue that Republican establishment types and the real RNC, they all make money off illegal immigration. They all like that there's a steady supply of people to work in chicken plants, and they don't complain when they cut off a finger or they can't go out in the streets and protest or they'll be arrested by ICE. They like that there's an underclass of people who essentially have no rights and a right to work states. They really have no rights. And so they like that there's this steady supply of non-union, easy to please, work for $5 an hour type labor, and they like that. And he knew that the Republican base hates it, and he could play that up. Trump doesn't even mean it, because they've said, you know, there's been illegal immigrants working at his properties and things like that. They've done construction for him. They've done landscaping for him. So even at the time he was saying all this stuff, they were working for him. So they knew he didn't really mean it. And all of his, you know, talking about offshoring of jobs and what a big deal that is, they looked at Trump ties made in China, Trump suits made in Malaysia, Trump shirts made in Bangladesh. Some of the same stuff was made in Mexico, the very country that he's hit hammered the hardest and the most. Even though he's painting himself as Mr. I stand up to China, I'll put them down, I'll force China to toe the line, I'm a strong man against China, John Bolton's book says that Trump has gone to China and asked them for re-election help. The whole fucking thing is smoke and mirrors. The anti-immigrant guy who marries Melania, a mail order bride, that a lot of people say a prostitute from Yugoslavia, makes her first lady, the first FLOTUS that's ever been a true immigrant and also a mail order bride and also probably a fucking former prostitute if we want to be truthful about it. And yet he's the Mr. Anti-Immigrant guy at the same time that he's got illegal immigrants working at all of his properties. At the same time he's talking about offshoring of jobs, all the Trump clothing and materials and stuff like that, they're made in overseas factories and sweatshops. At the same time he's talking about standing up to China and getting tough with them, he's begging Xi Jinping for help with his re-election and praising everybody from him to Kim Jong-un, talking about what great leaders they are. He's a nationalist whose support comes from Russia, America's top enemy, and is put in office by Vladimir Putin, a guy that wants to see America crumble. What kind of fucking nationalist is that? So it's all bullshit and it's all smoke and mirrors, but the point is he's a political animal and that he can convince you that that's not true. He's a business genius, even as he's lost money on casinos. He's going to make you rich, even as Trump University and all these Ponzi schemes that he's getting sued for, even at the time he's running for president, are proven to be fraudulent, even as everybody who's ever worked with him has had to sue him because he fucked him out of money or fucked him over. But he's going to make you rich. He's the strong man who's always bitching and moaning and crying to the media, right? He's a political animal. He knows how to paint a reality. He knew Biden was the one guy he couldn't beat. I'm sure they've done internal polling and they've said, hey, in that Midwestern corridor, Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, Biden is the most popular Democrat there. And I think Biden can beat him because, number one, Biden is from Pennsylvania. Pretty positive his chances in Pennsylvania are quite good. I think he's going to pull Pennsylvania pretty easily. I think he's going to pull Michigan quite easily because Michigan, Trump couldn't be less popular there. Michigan actually has one of the highest rates of coronavirus deaths after New York and New Jersey, which that makes sense because those are way more populated states, the tri-state area. That makes really more sense. Michigan, why do they have so many coronavirus deaths, right? And because they've been hit really, really hard by coronavirus, and also the fact that, according to their governor, Trump has literally encouraged people not to give them supplies. So I think he's going to be able to pull Michigan and Pennsylvania away pretty easily. He's only got to get one more. Let's look at the others that he could get. North Carolina, Democratic governor. Trump has pulled the convention from North Carolina, which that can't sit well with a lot of North Carolinians who were kind of counting on the convention for hotel bookings and merchandising and street vendors and restaurants were going to make money, and takes a lot of money out of the state. So that can't totally sit well with them that he's done that. There's North Carolina, there's Ohio, there's Arizona, there is Wisconsin, and Florida. Now, those are five huge purple states. And right now, Joe Biden is beating Trump in every one of those polls. Say, okay, but yeah, but it's within the margin of error, right? That's all true. But what that means is that Trump, a notoriously undisciplined, self-destructive candidate who could fly off the handle at any minute and do something stupid, he's got to flip a coin five times and have it land on heads. He's got to win all five of those. I don't think he can do it. I mean, unless he just flat out cheats. And those are the five before we get to Texas and Georgia. Now, some people think he can win Texas and Georgia. If it's a true Biden landslide, he's going to win Texas and Georgia. Biden wins the five states I just listed, plus Texas and Georgia. He's won the biggest electoral college victory in 30 years. And the biggest one for, because most electoral college victories, they're for Republicans. George H.W. Bush against Dukakis, and Reagan in 84, and Nixon in 72. I mean, he's won probably the biggest electoral college victory for a Democratic president, Carter LBJ time period. So, I mean, it's been a while since a Democratic candidate won by that much. The last huge, true Democratic ultra landslide, probably LBJ in 64 when he beat Barry Goldwater, and he won everything but the Southeast. And this just goes to show you, by the way, that when a lot of people are saying, well, the Democratic Party, they just use black people and they don't care about them and all this stuff, it's not really true, because LBJ knew when he passed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, he knew that those would cost him the Southeast. He says, we've lost the Southeast for a generation. In 64, other than Arizona, which was Barry Goldwater's home state, the only other states he won were three or four southern states, Alabama being one of them, of course. But other than a handful of southern states, LBJ won I think it was like a 44-state victory against Goldwater, which is incredible. No Democratic president wins victories by that big a margin. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. The South, only 4 years before that, they'd gone for Kennedy. So that just goes to show you that, yeah, it did shift a lot. I mean, the South used to be reliably Democratic, and that cost them that. So the Democrats are willing to put their skin in the game. They are willing to stand up. And this idea that, oh, they're just using black people because they need the votes. The white working class is a lot bigger. I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm just saying that's the reality. Probably 5 working class white people votes for every 1 black vote that the Democrats get. They lose votes catering to the black community. So this idea that it's just a scheme to get votes. Black people are 13% of America. When you take out the people that either do not vote or cannot vote, probably less than 7% of the electorate. And of the people that vote and vote regularly, it may not even be 7% of the electorate. And they'll say, well, yeah, but that's not true in these big cities and stuff. But the Democratic Party, this is why Republicans have so much power. The way that our voting system is set up, it skews towards rural areas. That's true for the Electoral College. Rural areas have more power. It's true for congressional seats. Because, for example, the last decade was so badly gerrymandered, Nancy Pelosi was getting 1 million more votes, and the Republicans still had 30 seats on her in the House. Nancy Pelosi was the minority leader, should have been the majority leader, because she was getting 1 million more votes regularly in election after election. And yet the Republicans still controlled the House by a comfortable margin. The Senate, 18% of the country controls half of the Senate seats. Senate doesn't even pretend to be Democratic. How do North Dakota and South Dakota, how do they outvote California? California's got 15% of the United States. We get outvoted by 4 yahoos from the Dakotas. I'm amazed anytime the Democrats take the Senate because of how badly skewed it is. For every small state that the Democrats have, like Vermont or say Connecticut or something like that, I mean, there's 3 times as many sparsely populated red states. Elizabeth Warren, before she won, her seat was held by Scott Brown. That was Ted Kennedy's Senate seat. So I'm saying that's how bad it is for Democrats. They can't even reliably count on Ted Kennedy's Senate seat credit control. Republicans, they have a chance to pick up very, very, very liberal seats. If they put right candidates in at the right time, at the right moment, the right midterm, they can win reliably Democratic seats. There's no such thing as a safe, you know, I've used these same statistics over and over. I'll say them again because it bears repeating. California had a Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, very recently. New York City, before Bill de Blasio, they had 20 years of Republican rule. This is the most liberal city in America. They have Republican mayor for 20 years. Ted Kennedy's Senate seat is owned by Scott Brownback. So Mitt Romney was the governor of Massachusetts. Massachusetts currently has a Republican governor, even though it's the 3rd or 4th most liberal state in America, currently has a Republican governor. Illinois had a Republican governor until recently. Vermont has a Republican governor. So it's one of those things where there's no such thing as a totally safe Democratic area, whereas there is for Republicans. There's at least 10 states where Democrats are not even remotely competitive. I would say more than 10 states. If you can have a candidate that you know red state people, if they don't love Joe Biden, they don't hate him. They're not afraid of him. They don't think that he's crazy. They don't think that he's gonna like steal their, you've seen some people get in his face about guns. In Michigan, some guy said, you're gonna take my guns away. Joe Biden says, that ain't true, buddy. Let me tell you the truth about it. They respect that. They respect a guy who's a little in your face. And there's a little, like, I'll push back on you a little bit. Red state people are slightly more, I might say more confrontational, certainly more than California. California is just almost like, just unbelievably passive. But sometimes red state people are like, they kind of like the Joe Biden gets in their face. I mean, here it is Father's Day weekend. And that's why I thought it might be a good time to talk about Joe Biden, because he's sort of your grandpa. He wants to take you out for ice cream and talk about trains, but pushes buttons in the wrong way. And it's like, now just wait a minute here, you snot-nosed punk. I like that he's a little old school in that way. People say that old school and they cringe. And I'm like, this is the problem with the Democratic Party, to the point of Joe Biden will probably be a more liberal president than either of the Clintons and Barack Obama. I think he's more liberal on almost everything, almost every issue. They said he pushed Obama to embrace gay marriage. He came out on it before anybody else did. He's routinely been nice to Bernie Sanders, working class Joe, some people might call him. And yet at the same time, they view him as like a VCR. They view him as some relic from the 70s and 80s. Oh, he should have been nicer to Anita Hill. Ancient bullshit. Stuff that just really kind of was settled a while ago. And they view him as unbelievably sellout. He's just not going to be good. I feel that he'll be a more liberal president than anyone we've had in many decades, mostly because he's always been like that. Like, it's funny to me that like a New England liberal, which is what Joe Biden really is, he's now viewed, he might as well be from Kansas or something like that, which I actually think is a really good thing. This is what excites me, is that fact, because that means he can get away with more stuff. I've said before that John Edwards, he's for every damn thing Bernie Sanders is for. John Edwards had all these radical ideas that were more liberal, way more liberal than Obama and Hillary on almost everything. But people were like, well, you know, a heterosexual white male. I mean, we've been there, we've done that, you know, whatever. I mean, they viewed him as a conservative, even though he's not. He's not even remotely conservative, right? I mean, they viewed him as more moderate than he really was. And with Biden, I think the same thing is happening. That's what I like about him. But when all these people are like, well, Biden, he doesn't excite me, I don't like him, Trump is afraid of him. And in my opinion, you always go for the candidate that it's obvious that they don't want to run against. It's obvious that they don't want to run against Joe Biden. And that's why I'm glad he's the nominee. Because if Trump is willing to break the law to go around the world looking up dirt on him, that shows he's afraid of him. That shows they've done internal polling that shows he will lose to Joe Biden. If he's got to get Warren, or he's got to get Bernie, or he's got to get anybody but Biden in that position so that he can have a line of attack against him. He has no good line of attack against Biden. He's done Sleepy Joe, and he's done that Biden has mental problems. Honestly, it's ridiculous, because you could pull up Covfefe and all these dumbass tweets Trump's always sending. Trump literally has had mental decline since he's been in the Oval Office. He's got a different mentality than when he first took office. So you can tell that Trump's having cognitive mental decline, so it's a little ridiculous to play up Joe Biden's age and his mental health and things like that. Physically, Joe Biden might be in better shape than Trump is. Trump can barely walk half the time because he's scarfing down steaks. He's getting fatter every day. It's one of those things where he doesn't have a good line of attack against him on that. Then you get to the whole thing about, oh, my kids, Joe Biden, his son Hunter Biden, all that corruption. And I'm like, Don and Eric, for God's sakes, done everything but give the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia a blowjob in the Oval Office. I mean, there's no telling what they've been able to sell to foreign leaders and dignitaries and said, hey, if you'll stay at this Trump hotel, you know, you might get the president's ear one day. Who knows about that? Hey, grant our permits overseas in this, and maybe we'll be favorable to you on tariffs. To allege corruption on Hunter Biden, it's stupid, because the Trump kids, and also, it's really dumb, because Joe Biden, it just draws attention to the fact that he lost his daughter and wife in a car accident, and then he lost his other son, Beau, to brain injuries that were probably sustained from his time overseas fighting for this nation, which Trump's not those kids. Would they ever fight for America? Would they ever go serve overseas? They never would. I mean, their idea of going overseas is to go over there and shoot a fucking giraffe. Last time we were overseas, we were in a war zone. Oh, you were? Yeah, we were shooting an elephant, and it had the biggest tusk you've ever seen, man. You could make 3 sets of piano keys out of those tusks. It was so big. It just draws attention to the fact of Biden's personal tragedies. Hunter is the only child he has left alive. That's his only son. He likes to be close to him. You see him at basketball games, and they're getting ice cream cones. And it draws attention to the fact Biden has a much more traumatic and tragic family history than Trump does. It really makes Trump look awful to keep drawing attention to this shit. Not to mention the fact he was impeached over looking for this stuff. He was impeached over looking for blackmail. So why would he keep bringing up Hunter Biden when, on the other hand, you could just say, oh, you mean all the blackmail you went to Ukraine and China and were fishing for and looking for that stuff? I really would be dumber than hell to keep bringing that up. Then you get to the fact of, well, there's the whole Tara Reid thing, and we've watched that implode and blow up on Trump, because Trump has got 25, I think it's 25 or 30 sexual harassment and sexual assault allegations. Different women have accused him of rape, different things like that. All this terrible personal baggage of it being like, while Melania had a kid, he was fucking porn stars, he was paying Playboy bunnies, he had prostitutes, call girls on the regular. Melania herself may be a former call girl. The first time they had sex, he probably paid her. We can't find any of Melania's modeling photos from before they met. All the modeling photos of Melania from before she was under Trump's wing, she's naked in all those pictures. She's topless, or we see her ass, or she's totally naked. It looks more and more like when he said he found her in a catalog, it was a prostitution catalog of different escorts that he could pick out, and that's why she has no clothes on in any of her earliest modeling pictures. She's so tabloids to keep those stories from coming out. Now, Melania, to me, seems very defensive about this allegation. Doesn't seem like she wants it. So to bring up Tara Reid, which we saw Tara Reid change her story 4 times in the last year, and now her original lawyer who was back in her case, he said, oh, I've dropped her as a client. He knows she's lying. He knows she's making it up. And he knows that's why he dropped her. When a lawyer starts dropping clients, the client has misled them in some way, and they no longer want to be associated with them. Or the client can't pay. This is really blown up in Trump's face. They made a really big deal out of Tara Reid. I think it's become more and more obvious that she's making it up, which, by the way, Alabama liberal called it, said that several months ago. Now more and more people who said, oh, you don't know, you don't know. Now more and more people have said, yeah, you're probably right. It was a last-ditch effort to help Bernie, and it didn't work out. And now Biden's the nominee, so who cares? He doesn't have sexual assault. He doesn't have the Hunter Biden, quote-unquote, corruption scandal, because his own kids look so much worse. He doesn't have cognitive mental decline. He really has no great line of attack against Joe Biden, because every single thing he could go after Biden for, he's done 10 times worse on those same topics and those same issues. So to draw attention to any of that stuff just makes him look ridiculous, and it makes him look worse. Because this is a prediction episode. Every fifth episode's prediction episodes. Unless Trump cheats, I believe Joe Biden will beat him. Unless Trump cheats. Like, unless Trump finds some way to get Russia to hack voting machines, or he calls off the election, or he shuts down every voting booth in the Arizona cities and not the suburbs, I believe that Joe Biden will beat Trump unless he can cheat. Because like I said, I feel pretty confident in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And then out of Arizona, North Carolina, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Florida, I think Biden will pick up 3 of those. I don't know if he'll pick up all 5. I sure hope he picks up all 5. He only needs 1. Do I think he can get 1? I think he can get 1. I feel good he can get North Carolina. And I also feel good that he can get Wisconsin. Florida and Arizona, those are coin toss states. I think part of it depends on if the economy gets a lot worse. If the economy gets a lot worse, he can probably pick up both of them. If coronavirus gets a lot worse and there's a second wave, which there's already beginning to be, I think he can pick up both of them. You know, he doesn't even need them at that point if he's already got Wisconsin and North Carolina. But I believe he can pick up Florida and Arizona. I think Ohio may be the only one he doesn't get out of those 5. I hope he can flip Texas and Georgia. I really would love to see that. I'd love to see the South come out for him in a huge way, and for the Democratic Party to make a comeback in the Southeast. Keep in mind, there's never been a Democratic president elected with only 1 Southern state. So Hillary only got Virginia. She didn't win Florida. And in 2012, Obama got both Florida and Virginia. And in 2008, he got North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida, which that would be great. If Biden does that, he's won the race, basically. If you sweep the Midwest, you can only get Virginia and still win. But it really benefits if you can get at least 2 Southern states. I believe he can, but I'd love to see Georgia and Florida turn the right way, because that also helps the Senate candidates. If Biden picks up those states, you got to figure that there's 2 Senate seats in Georgia and there's 1 in Texas. And if he can pick up both those states, you got to figure that that's at least 1 Senate seat that's being flipped, I would figure. So that would be terrific. But Arizona, his odds look better and better every day. And there's about to be a second wave of coronaviruses. Old people are terrified of this. Arizona is a slightly older state, big retirement state. That helps Mark Kelly, who is one of the top Senate seats that they're trying to flip, and I believe that they can. And just to add it in, because people are like, well, now you've said all the states, but what if Trump can flip some of Hillary's state? Impossible. Hillary's states are Minnesota, Virginia, I believe New Mexico, and Nevada, Colorado. Will Trump flip any of those? No. Since he's been elected, they've gotten more liberal, not less, right? Literally, I mean, every year, every day he's been in office, they've gotten more liberal. They've elected more Democrats. I'm also thinking that Colorado, I think if there's any 2 seats that the Democrats flip, it'll be Arizona and Colorado for the Senate. I'm hoping against hope that it's Maine as well. Susan Collins needs to go. I don't believe he has a chance of flipping any of Hillary's states. He just has to maintain what he's already got to win, and I don't think it's going to be possible. People are saying, well, now, wait a minute. Economy's getting better every day, and the coronavirus cases are going down every day. Neither one of those things are true, my friends. The coronavirus cases are going up. We're seeing spikes in more than 20 states, and they've already gone out. Even Fauci has said the idea of a second shutdown is unlikely. Even Fauci has gone on record as saying a second shutdown is very unlikely. I don't think it's going to happen. And obviously, if there's no second shutdown and cases are spiking, you could wind up seeing, right now there's over 120,000 Americans have died from coronavirus. You could wind up seeing that number again, double that. I mean, it could be 200,000. It could be over 200,000. And then at that point, I don't see how in the fuck Trump can be reelected. I just don't see anybody being able to say that he's handled this well and he knows what he's doing and we feel confident in him being president. And the economy, what's going up is the stock market. But what they're calling economic wins, they said like, oh, unemployment, it was 1 point better than we thought it was going to be. 16%, we thought it'd be 17%. That's not an economic win. I mean, it wasn't anywhere near that 3 or 4 months ago. And the only reason that the economy is stable is because the Fed's pumping so much money into it, and also all the moratoriums. For the last 6 months, there's been no mortgage payments. There's been no evictions. There's been, like, you can get extensions on your rent. You can get extensions on student loans, extensions on your health care. $600 extra a week unemployment. That expires in July. The $600 extra a week unemployment goes away in July, and then you've also got all the things in July and August, like people are going to have to start paying their mortgage again, paying rent again. They can be evicted again. They can have to pay student loans and credit card debt and all these things that they've had the monkey off their back for a minute. But even people who have gone back to work, they've missed 10 weeks of work. All the money that they've been doing, they're just trying to make up for all the things that they weren't able to buy during those 10 weeks, let alone when their debts start to catch up with them. I believe once July and August ends and all those things catch up to people, you're going to see a wave of bankruptcies. And they say, well, now, Alabama Liberal, you predicted that back in episode 64 when you talked about the recession is here, let's invest. Yeah, but hadn't everything I said pretty much been true? The companies I said to invest in, Microsoft, Apple, Qualcomm, and Visa, they're all way up from where they were. And Microsoft, I was the most sure about. It's now record high. Apple, same thing. Those are the most I was sure about. I put them in that order too. Microsoft, Apple, Qualcomm, and Visa, and they're all way up from where they were. A lot of the companies that I said avoid from Pier 1, I said would go out of business. Pier 1 is being liquidated. They're not going to reopen at all. So you also have all these retail jobs, like hundreds of JCPenney stores. I also said JCPenney would be likely to file for bankruptcy. They did. And got all these retail stores that are going out of business left and right. Now, that's millions of more people that work in retail that are going to be unemployed. And what the hell are they going to do? Because nobody's going to want to be hiring right now. No matter what they think about the unemployment numbers, they're going to go down. And no matter what they think about all the debts, they're going to go up because the Fed's just been keeping them artificially low. So when these two waves, when they hit, you see waves of personal bankruptcies, people defaulting on loans and credit and things like that. That's going to hurt the banks. The banks get hurt. They don't start loaning out money to struggling retailers like JCPenney who are desperate for more loans to keep their stores afloat. That closes more stores. It's a vicious cycle in that way. And it's going to all be hitting at about the worst possible time. This is 2008 all over again. Because remember, John McCain was beating Barack Obama for most of 2008, John McCain was beating him until the economy collapsed August, September, October. And then people say, well, it's because McCain was dumb enough to pick Sarah Palin as his running mate. No, it's because the economy collapsed. And Bush got the majority of the blame for that, as he should have. Barack Obama's even said he was not running against John McCain. I was running against the Bush White House and the policies of the time and the economy and the mood of the time against Bush. It really wasn't even about John McCain. Unfortunately for Trump, this is going to be about Trump. He's got to run for re-election. So it ain't like he can just say like, oh, this has nothing to do with me. It's not my fault. He will say that. He'll say it's Obama's fault and blame it on him. And meanwhile, here's Joe Biden. Comfy, cozy, elderly, comforting, grandfatherly Joe Biden who likes ice cream cones and trains. And he's got a cool kick-ass running mate in Kamala Harris. And he's over there saying, hey, remember the Obama days? Well, I'm over here with the female Obama. She's going to be my VP. She'll step in if I need anything. It's the Obama days all over again. Remember the economy was great. No stupid stuff. We had SARS outbreaks and Ebola. They went away pretty quickly. We can go back to that time of stability and sanity and not being exhausted with the president every day and a pretty great economy. We can do it all again. Nostalgia Joe over here. Don't you want to turn back the clock? Don't you want to pretend Trump never happened? And since a majority of the country never voted for Trump in the first place, they're going to be like, fuck yes. Get this asshole off our televisions. Joe Biden 2020. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for episode 71 coming up shortly.